Leviticus chapter 11, we are looking at the dietary laws. 32 times in this chapter we hear the word unclean. 10 times we hear the word abomination. God is ministering to them even at their table that they would make a difference between clean and unclean. And again, last week we made mention of some of the habits that they most likely had picked up while spending 400 years in Egypt, and how God desired that they would be separate from those things. So now, even down to their table, God is prescribing the way that they should live. And in all things, God is constantly putting on their heart to divide between that which He has designated as unclean and that which He has designated as clean, that they would be holy because He is holy. And 9 times in different forms in the book of Leviticus, it says that, "Be holy, for I am holy." So we worked our way through here. They were allowed to eat those things that chewed the cud and parted the hoof. Weren't allowed to eat the rabbit, chewed the cud but didn't part the hoof. They weren't allowed to eat certain things that were in the water, things that we love, like shrimp and lobster. Weren't allowed to eat. They weren't allowed to eat the seagull. We looked through this, the different owls. Couldn't eat the eagles, the stork, the heron, the lapwing. Couldn't eat bats. We were all depressed because of that. We got some leeway with bugs. Certain locusts they were allowed to eat. Bald locusts, crickets, grasshoppers. Certain things were permissible. We found our way down to verse 27, where it says, "Whatever goes on his paws among all manner of beasts that go on all four, those are unclean unto you. Whoso toucheth their carcass shall be unclean until evening." So we're not allowed to eat those things that go upon their paws. And last Sunday night after that study, someone came up to me and told me that they had just closed down a Chinese restaurant in the area, the health department, and found 40 frozen cats in their freezer. Yeah, you put some monosodium gluconate and some sauce in there, you can't tell a difference. As long as it's cooked, some noodles, you know. Helps in the profit margin. Chicken's a little tough, don't you think? 40 frozen cats. Second Timothy says this. You don't have to turn there. I'll read this to you. Second Timothy, or First Timothy, I'm sorry. Chapter 2, verse 1 says, "I exhort, therefore, first of all, that supplications, prayers, intercessions, and giving of thanks be made for all men, kings, all that are in authority, that they may you may lead a quiet and peaceable life in all godliness and honesty." So we hear much about intercession in the church today. Many people take that to themselves. I'm an intercessor. I think I've only known 2 or 3 in my entire life, but a lot of people like to call themselves that. Intercession, certainly those who would stand in the gap and plead before God regularly in prayer on behalf of others. Intercession. Well, the word is only used twice in the New Testament. The other place that we find it used is where it says, "There will be those in the last days that depart from the faith, giving heed to seducing spirits and doctrines of devils, forbidding to marry," and so forth. It says, "teaching that you should abstain from certain foods which God hath created to be received with thanksgiving of them that believe and know the truth. For every creature of God is good, nothing is to be refused if it is received with thanksgiving, for it is sanctified by the word of God and prayer." Intercession. It's the only other time in the Bible, in the New Testament, where this word intercession is used. Now, getting back to the cats, the idea is we hear so much about intercession, only used twice in all the New Testament. One time we're to intercede for the president, for rulers, for kings, those in authority, that we might lead a peaceable and quiet life. And the other place is you intercede over your dinner table, over the food, because you never know whether it's Colonel Chow's chicken or tabby there on your plate. So the other place that we should intercede is when we say grace and ask God to sanctify our food and to strengthen us that we might serve Him. And He can do that with cat or whatever He wants to. Tastes good, put some gravy on it, and let's go. Verse 28 says, "He that beareth the carcass of them," the animals with paws, "shall wash his clothes, be unclean until evening. They are unclean unto you. These also shall be unclean unto you among creeping things that creep upon the earth." The weasel, in case you're tempted. The mouse. The tortoise, after his kind. Now, I like snapper soup. I think it's good. The ferret, just in case you thought, well, I can't eat weasels, but ferrets. Can't eat the ferret. The chameleon and the lizard, no eating those. The snail, and I don't know who could eat snails anyway. I worry about you if you can eat snails, believe me. And the mole. And if you eat them, you can come over to my house and catch as many as you want in my backyard. I'd like to get rid of a few of them. I had an article I shared a number of years ago about a symposium on the West Coast on drug abuse, and part of it was on toad licking, because they discovered that there were certain exotic toads in South America that when they were frightened, they excreted a certain oil on their back, and that if you took that oil and put it on your tongue, it was much like LSD. It was a hallucinogen, and people that licked these toads were getting high and hallucinating. And, of course, I read the article with great interest, because in my mind, and I'm sorry, but I have to think, who licked the first toad and why? What was wrong with that character? What was he thinking when he did that, and what was he expecting? And he must have just shared it with his closest friend after the experience, too. Either that or some, probably an old Mayan tradition where they saw one of their little kids, take that out of your mouth, and then they watched him, and he was in La La Land for the next hour, I don't know. Aren't you glad you're saved? Me too, because I probably would have ended up there. Aquarium full of toads in the living room. Putting on snake videos to scare them. Oh, Lord, how excellent is thy name in all the earth. These are unclean to you among all that creep. Whosoever doth touch them when they're dead. So not only are you not allowed to eat dead weasels, ferrets, lizards, and chameleons, but you can't play with them when they're dead either, shall be unclean until evening. And upon whatsoever any of them, when they are dead, doth fall, it shall be unclean. So if a dead mouse falls out of your closet onto your coat, it's unclean until evening. It tells you what to do here. Whether it be a vessel of wood or raiment of leather, or a sack, or whatsoever vessel it be, wherein any work is done, it must be put into water. It shall be unclean until evening, and so it shall be cleansed. So if a rodent or something falls into a pot, unclean till evening. And my wife, when I met her in 1976, had just come back from a tree planting team in Mount Baker in Washington. She was cooking for a tree planting team. Believe it or not, my wife, if you know my wife, this is hard to believe. When I met her, she had overalls and pigtails and work boots on, and had been living up in a mountain in a blizzard cooking for a tree planting team. And And they would get up like 2:30 in the morning and have breakfast ready by 4, because these guys would get started early because they get paid for the amount of trees they got in the ground. And they were up late, some of them one night messing around doing something, and when she got up in the morning, there was a reach in the pot to clean stuff out, and a dead mouse was in the coffee pot, had gotten in there at nighttime and drowned. And that wouldn't have stopped me from drinking coffee, of course, because you boil it and it kills the germs. But my wife, imagine that. Tree planting, living in a tent, cooking on a Coleman stove, work boots, overalls, such a woman. She doesn't do that anymore. I think, what an elaborate deception just to get a husband. Now we stay in motels, you know. Eye-level oven. Every earthen vessel wherein any of these small creatures would fall dead, whatsoever is in it shall be unclean. You shall break it. Of all food which may be eaten, that on which such water cometh shall be unclean. And all drink that may be drunk in every such vessel shall be unclean. So if a dead mouse falls in your pitcher of water and that gets on the food's unclean, the pitcher's unclean, the water's unclean. And everything whereupon any part of their carcass falleth shall be unclean, whether it be the oven or the ranges or the pots. They shall be broken down, for they are unclean, and shall be unclean unto you. Nevertheless, a fountain or a pit, wherein there is plenty of water, shall be clean, but that which touches their carcass shall be unclean. So if you've been to Israel, you know that water is a problem. If you have a cistern, which is a huge basin that could hold thousands of gallons, what it's saying is if a mouse falls in there and dies, you don't just ruin the whole cistern. That's, it says, but whatever you scoop the dead mouse out with, that's unclean till evening, but the cistern, it says, is still clean. If any part of their carcass fall upon any sowing seed, if you're going to plant seed, which is to be sown, the seed is clean. But if any water be put on the seed, and any part of their carcass fall thereon, it shall be unclean unto you. So if there was a dead animal in the water, and that water ends up on the seed, then the seed is unclean. If any beast of which you may eat, a clean animal, dies, he that toucheth the carcass shall be unclean until evening. And he that eateth of the carcass of it shall wash his clothes and be unclean until the evening. He also that beareth the carcass of it shall wash his clothes and be unclean until evening. And every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth, now this is evidently in the realm of bugs, shall be an abomination. It shall not be eaten. He doesn't have to tell me that. Whatsoever goeth upon the belly, and whatsoever goeth upon all fours, or whatsoever hath more feet among all creeping things that creepeth upon the earth, like spiders, tarantulas, them ye shall not eat. They are an abomination. You shall not make yourselves abominable with any creeping thing that creepeth, neither shall you make yourselves unclean with them, that you should be defiled thereby, for I am the Lord your God. You shall therefore sanctify or set yourselves apart. You shall be holy, for I am holy. Neither shall you defile yourselves with any manner of creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. For I am the Lord that bringeth you up out of the land of Egypt to be your God. You shall therefore be holy, for I am holy. And again, repeated some 9 times, the challenge. God, again, condescending, stooping down to our table, telling us what to do, to warning us about dead vermin that may bring disease in our water, in our pots. God stooping all the way down to our kitchen to simple health matters, to demonstrate his love in the most commonplace, you know, places where we live out our lives, in our kitchen, in our ovens, in our pots, God stooping down. And he says, in all of these things I'm involved, and there is order, and there is cleanliness. And he says, in all of this, remember that I, the Lord your God, am holy, so you need to be holy also. He's asking them to set themselves aside. Now, when you think of holiness, I think you have to understand several things. Holiness, I believe in my heart, is as much a direction as it is something that's imputed to us by at the court of God in heaven. It's recognized in us because of the work of Christ. But for you and I here in our experience, it is a life to me that is set toward God. If you are living your life toward God, you are living a holy life. If you are living your life away from God, you are living an unholy life. You look at unholiness around us and see what it does. We see the bloodshed. We see the child abuse. We see the adultery. We see the rape. We see the drug abuse. We see the murder. We see the child pornography. We see the bigotry. Look around the world, and what you see is the fruit of unholiness. God created Adam and Eve to be in fellowship with Him. That is holiness. To walk with the Lord and to be His. To turn away from Him and from His statutes and go towards worldly standards is to head in the direction of unholiness or unseparateness. Now, the secret of being separate to God, again, is not what you're separated from, but who you're separated unto. The Bible says that we should love the Lord with all of our heart, soul, mind, and strength, and our neighbor as ourselves. But it says that we love Him because He first loved us. And if you are under a religious system, and sometimes even in the church, where it's pharisaical and it's ritualistic and it's condemning, sometimes we get tired of trying to be a Christian and living up to certain standards. And we get the feeling that we're never going to do it, we're never going to make it, we're never going to please God, because He has portrayed to us by someone who's misrepresenting Him. As we begin to grow in grace, as Peter says, and in the knowledge of the Lord Jesus Christ, and we start to understand His love and what He has done for us and in us and to us and what His commitment to us is, we realize there is no one that has ever loved us the way He loves us. And as we realize that, and as we grow in that truth, grace becomes a very powerful force in our lives. Some people talk about cheap grace. There's no such thing. It cost the blood of God's Son to extend His grace to us. Martin Lloyd-Jones, at the end of his life, said if he had to do it all over again, he would have preached grace his entire life. George Whitefield said in his ministry that as he observed the crowds that were converted to Christ through his ministry, he said, I saw better and longer lasting fruit preaching the love of Christ than I did hellfire. And because love is a powerful motivation in personal revival. And as we love Him, it isn't a struggle in regards to what we're giving up in regards to separation. That no longer is the problem. What we have to be separated from. Oh, I have to give up beer. I have to give up this. I have to give up gambling. I have to give up Atlantic City. No. When we love Him and our hearts are turned towards Him, separation is who we are separated unto. I heard Mother Teresa years ago addressing the UN or something. I was flipping around and she was there. And she spoke about holiness and she said, God is our creator and God is our redeemer. He made you and then He bought you back to Himself. So be His. If you are a carpenter, be God's carpenter. If you are a doctor, be God's doctor. Recognize His claim on your life. If you are a secretary, be God's secretary. If you're a sanitation engineer, be God's sanitation engineer. If you're a student, be God's student. If you're a husband, be God's husband. Or a wife, be God's wife. She said, that is holiness. Be ye holy, for I am holy. Separate your lives unto Him. You know, it says in the New Testament in a different way, in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 1, to walk worthy of the vocation that you're called to. What is your vocation? You know, we have many secondary vocations, and we mention some of those. Maybe we're going to college, we're working in a career, we're a computer, programmer. But there is a primary vocation that when this earth passes away will still be in the forefront of our life, and that is being sons and daughters of the Most High God. And He says, Paul says, walk worthy of the vocation. The idea is there should be something different about us now that we're saved, and there should be something different about our lives than there is about worldly people. And it is always a challenge for us. You know, again, when the New Testament says that we're salt and light, we remember that light is not heard, it's seen. And salt is not heard, it's tasted. And we can always witness to people, but the thing that blows their minds is when they see Christ in us, when they see it in action, when it's observable, when they can taste it, and it's not just testimony. That should be there, but the testimony of our lives speaks as loud as what we say with our mouths. And if there is no testimony of our life, what we say with our mouth has no volume to it at all. So the thing that we always have to challenge our own hearts about is are we holy in the sense, are we gods? Are we gods? Are we God's fathers? Are we fathering the way He wants us to? Are we God's husbands, men? Are we His in the home? You know, there's 1,000 books written by 1,000 great men on how to be a godly husband. You can set all of them aside if you will belong to the Holy Spirit moment by moment. And here he just says that, be ye holy. Doesn't mean that you float off the ground. Doesn't mean that they're going to make a saint of you when you die. Doesn't mean when somebody takes a photograph of you, you have a halo over your head. Doesn't mean any of those things. You don't leave footprints in the sand. You don't have B.O. You're holy. No, it doesn't mean that. It means your life is aimed, oriented toward and by God. And you belong to Him. And you're headed in His direction, being conformed to the image of His Son. He says, be holy, for I am holy. Even in these things that we do in regards to eating and drinking. Verse 46 says, this is the law of the beast and of the fowl and of every living creature that moveth in the waters and of every creature that creepeth upon the earth, to make a difference between unclean and clean, and between the beast that may be eaten and the beast that may not be eaten. And the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, saying, if a woman have conceived seed and born a man child, a little boy, she shall be unclean 7 days. Now there are ordinances given here in regards to childbirth. There is nowhere in the scripture that tells us that sex is unclean, that marriage is unclean, or that childbirth is unclean. There is a spiritual ritual attached to it, I believe, to remind the Jew that we have a problem that has been passed to us from Grandma Eve, and that her sin was passed to the next generation. As David said, I was born in sin, I was conceived in iniquity. So, in regards to that, it says she's unclean for 7 days. According to the days of the separation of her infirmity, she shall be unclean. No doubt there are some health aspects attached to that. And in the 8th day, the flesh of his foreskin, the little boy, shall be circumcised. Now, God's wisdom, again, it is the 8th day when the body produces vitamin K, which gives the human body the ability to coagulate. If you were to circumcise a little boy on the 5th day, he would bleed to death. Now, of course, when you have a little boy born, they give him a shot right away so they can do the circumcision. In God's wisdom, the 8th day is when the circumcision took place. Remarkably, too, we've discovered that when a baby is born and starts to come in contact with the real world, that his sensation grows from the top of his head down, from the top, from the head to the feet. And by the 8th day, the genitals are fairly insensitive still. God in his wisdom has all of this planned out, and it's remarkable the more we discover about God's ways and God's wisdom. Here it says, in the 8th day, the flesh of his foreskin shall be circumcised. She shall then continue in the blood of her purifying 33 more days. That's 40 days altogether. She shall touch no hallowed thing, nor come into the sanctuary until the days of her purifying be fulfilled. Now, it is a lesson, and certainly in the depravity of human beings. It was then that Mary came in Luke chapter 2, verse 22, to the temple, if you'll remember. If she bear a maid child, if she has a little girl, then she shall be unclean. Now, girls, for some reason, and I don't have the reason, so don't be mad at me, because Moses wrote it, and when we get to heaven, you can ask him. And if you're not happy what he says, you have to ask God, because God told him to write it. If you had a little girl, you were unclean initially for 2 weeks instead of 1 week. And then following that, you were unclean for 66 days instead of 33 days. All the figures are doubled for some reason. And I don't know why, and it's not given. And it isn't because little girls are dirtier than little boys. I mean, I got both at home, two of each. So I don't have the perfect answer for you. Does it have something to do with what we read in 1 Timothy about the woman being deceived first? I don't know that. Does it have something that we don't even understand yet? We've discovered his wisdom about circumcision on the eighth day. Maybe there are things about a daughter and a mother bonding that are different than a little boy and a mother bonding. I don't know that. I don't know. But we'll read it. If she bear a maid child, verse 5, then she shall be unclean 2 weeks, as in her separation. She shall continue in the blood of her purifying 80 days, 66 days, double that of the male, 80 days altogether instead of 40. When the days of her purifying are fulfilled for a son or for a daughter, she shall bring a lamb of the first year for a burnt offering and a young pigeon or a turtle dove for a sin offering under the door of the tabernacle of the congregation unto the priest, who shall offer it before the Lord and make an atonement for her. She shall be cleansed from the issue of her blood. This is the law of her that hath borne a male or a female. And if she be not able to bring a lamb, she's too poor, she doesn't have the means, then she shall bring two turtles, that's turtle doves, obviously, or two young pigeons, the one for the burnt offering, the other for the sin offering, and the priest shall make an atonement for her, and she shall be clean. Of course, the interesting thing is in Luke 2:24, it says when Mary and Joseph brought Jesus to the temple, they brought two turtle doves, which meant that they could not afford a lamb. Interesting, as she was then cleansed. Chapter 13, and we'll see if we can get through this. God bless you for coming. Chapter 13 is the most detailed ancient record known to man on diagnosing a disease. There is no other ancient inscription that goes into this great of a detail in any of the hieroglyphics or the cuneiform writings or any of the writings of the Sumerians or any ancient cultures that go into this much detail about diagnosing a disease. Now, the disease that is diagnosed is that of leprosy. I'm sure as we look at it, it probably takes in elephantitis, it may take in skin cancer, probably takes in some other things that makes it broader than leprosy. But it certainly includes leprosy. And the rabbis in Jesus' day said if you had leprosy, you were the walking dead. It usually took 10 to 20 years to kill you, but there was no cure. You were put outside of the city. You lived in the garbage dump where you scavenged for food, or you lived in a leper colony. And you were consigned to that life until you died, until you slowly dwindled away, and they considered it the finger of God. They said that there was some moral problem in your life, and that's why you were smitten with this disease. So imagine that some of the lepers, not only are they struggling with, Lord, if you love me, why are you allowing this to happen? I'm separated from my wife, I'm separated from my children, I'm separated from my home, I wasn't there when my mother died or my father died. Not only are you wrestling with that, you're also wrestling with what the religious community is putting on you, saying that you, there must be something wrong in your life for God to put this affliction on you, which of course was not true. So we have great detail. Now, the reason that the detail is given to it is throughout It is a type of sin. Leprosy is much like sin. It is insidious like sin. It starts in a way that we don't understand. It is communicated in a way we don't understand. There are doctors who have injected live leprosy bacilli into themselves, trying to inflict themselves with the disease, that are unable to do it. We're not sure how it spreads. A Norwegian doctor, Dr. Hansen, is the one who isolated the bacilli. Now it's called Hansen's disease. Of course, if you had the disease, you'd rather, someone said, hey, what do you have? You'd rather say Hansen's disease than, oh, I got leprosy. We can arrest it today. As far as I know, there is no vaccine. They had estimated by 96 there would be one, but I haven't heard anything about it. And one of the experiments they're doing is with armadillos, because they've discovered that leprosy attacks the appendages first, the ears, the nose, the ends of the fingers, and it attacks through the nerves and affects the nervous system, but it starts where your body temperature is just a little lower. And the thing they realize about the armadillo, because they were unable to culture leprosy in other laboratory animals until they realized the armadillo, his temperature is just a little bit below most other animals, and they have now been able to culture it in the armadillo. Now, I think, by the way, there's also a spiritual application that we should guard ourselves, because it's in the areas of our lives that tend to be cooler where sin can first get a foothold. And leprosy then throughout is a picture of sin. So we will look at the priest now looking for leprosy, and as we go through, take note of how much like sin it is, and how the Lord sometimes inspects our lives for things that need to change as we're convicted by the Spirit. Now, by the way, it is the only chapter in the Bible dedicated to the diagnosis of a disease, only one disease, leprosy. And throughout the New Testament, the leper is never healed. Even when Jesus heals him, he's cleansed. Jesus sends out the disciples. He says, pray for the sick, anoint them, cast out demons, cleanse the leper. Nowhere in the New Testament is the leper healed. It mentions it here in chapter 14 when he's healed. Nowhere in the New Testament. The leper's always cleansed. Jesus upholding the type of sin. The Lord spake unto Moses and to Aaron, saying, when a man shall have the skin of his flesh, in the skin of his flesh, a rising, a scab, or a bright spot, and it be in the skin of his flesh, like the plague of leprosy, then he shall be brought unto Aaron the priest, or unto one of his sons the priest. Now, like sin, you know, you're not taken to the doctor with this problem, you go to the priest. There is no medicine prescribed, because it's incurable. I'm going to move along, if you don't mind, and you'll appreciate the fact that I do, but you'll be able to say that I read all of Leviticus. The priest shall look on the plague in his skin of the flesh, and when the hair in the plague is turned white, and the plague in sight is deeper, lower than the skin of his flesh, it is a plague of leprosy, and the priest shall look on him and pronounce him unclean. So if the priest sees something wrong with the skin, the spot in the skin, the hair is dying, it's turned white, and that infected area, that patch in the skin, is lower than the skin, it's depressed, they know the problem's underneath, and he says it's a leprosy, he's to be pronounced unclean. If the bright spot be white in the skin of his flesh, and in sight it's not deeper than the skin, and the hair thereof is not turned white, then the priest shall shut him up that has the plague for 7 days. So if he looks at you, you got a spot, it's not sunken down, your hair's not turning white, he locks you up for 7 days. And the priest shall look on him the seventh day, and behold, if the plague in his sight be at a stay, it hasn't spread, and the plague spread not in the skin, then the priest shall shut him up for 7 more days. 14 days now. And the priest shall look on him again in the seventh day, and behold, if the plague be somewhat dark, it's faded, and the plague spread not in the skin, the priest shall pronounce him clean. It is just a scab. But he shall wash his clothes and be clean. But if the scab spread abroad in the skin, now it is spread, like sin, after that he has seen that of the priest for his cleansing, he shall be seen of the priest again. So after the priest pronounces him clean, if he goes home and he knows it gets worse, he has to come back, see the priest again. If the priest see and behold the scab spreads in his skin, then the priest shall pronounce him unclean. It is a leprosy. When the plague of leprosy is in a man, then he shall be brought unto the priest. And the priest shall see him, and behold, if the rising be white in the skin, and it have turned the hair white, and there be quick raw flesh in the rising, it's broken open and there's raw flesh, it is an old leprosy, as in contrast to a new leprosy in the skin of his flesh. And the priest shall pronounce him unclean and shall not shut him up, for he is unclean. And if a leprosy break out abroad in the skin, and the leprosy cover all the skin of him that hath the plague, from his head even to his foot, wheresoever the priest looks, and the priest shall consider, and behold, if the leprosy have covered all of his flesh, he shall pronounce him clean that hath the plague. It is all turned white, he is clean. So if he looks at the man and from the top of his head to the bottom of his feet, he's got something broke out on his skin, and he can see that his appendages are not worn away, his skin's not depressed, the hair's not changing colors. He knows he's got something. He's got eczema, he's got a rash, he's allergic to something. You want to be careful. You don't want to put that guy out of the camp. So this guy is clean. It's covered his whole body. It's not leprosy. But when raw flesh appears in him, he shall be unclean. And the priest shall see the raw flesh and pronounce him to be unclean, for the raw flesh is unclean. It is a leprosy. And just that's how the flesh demonstrates itself when we're in sin also. Or if the raw flesh turn again and be changed unto white, he shall come unto the priest. Now it looks like it's getting better. The priest shall see him, and behold, if the plague be turned into white, then the priest shall pronounce him clean that hath the plague. He is clean. The flesh also, in which even in the skin thereof was a boil. Now, this is important. If you have a boil, they had boils. You know what a boil is? It's like a zit, only it's this big. For those of you who don't know. And in the place of the boil, there be a white rising, or a bright spot, white, somewhat reddish, and it be showed to the priest. And if when the priest seeth it, behold, it be in sight lower than the skin, and the hair thereof is turned white, the priest shall pronounce him unclean. It is a plague of leprosy broken out of the boil. But if the priest look on it, and behold, there be no white hairs therein, and if it be not lower than the skin, but it's somewhat dark, it's faded, it's a different color than the rest of the skin, then the priest shall shut him up for 7 days. And if it spread much abroad in the skin, then the priest shall pronounce him unclean. It is a plague if it is spread. But if the bright spot stay in his place, it isn't spreading, it's not spread, it is a burning boil, and the priest shall pronounce him clean. It's not leprosy. Important to make the difference. Or if there be any flesh in the skin whereon is a hot burning, some inflammation, and the quick flesh that burneth has a white bright spot, somewhat reddish or white. Isn't it interesting, the detail? Boy, don't you wish we would be this careful to look for sin in our own life? Then the priest shall look upon it, and behold, if the hair in the bright spot be turned white, and if it be in sight deeper than the skin, is depressed, it is a leprosy, broken out of the burning of the inflamed spot, an infection. Wherefore the priest shall pronounce him unclean. It is a plague of leprosy. But if the priest look on it, and behold, there is no white hair in the bright spot, and it be not lower than the other skin, but it's somewhat dark, it's faded, it's a different color, then the priest shall shut him up for 7 days, and the priest shall look upon him the seventh day, and if it be spread much abroad in the skin, then the priest shall pronounce him unclean. It is a plague of leprosy. And if the bright spot stay, it hasn't spread in its place, and spread not in the skin, but it be somewhat dark, it's faded, it's a different color, it is a rising of the burning. It's an inflammation, a swelling from an infection. The priest shall pronounce him clean, for it is an inflammation of a burning. It's not a leprosy. Now this is interesting. If a man or woman have a plague upon the head or the beard, so I guess it's spreading to the carnivals too, this leprosy. Just come on, stay with me. We have to lighten this up a little. I think if a woman has a beard, they should put her out of the camp anyway. But if a man or a woman have a plague upon the head or the beard, and I suspect we're just talking about the men there, I hope. Then the priest shall see the plague, and behold, if it be in sight deeper than the skin, and there be in it a yellow thin hair. Now this is great detail. Then the priest shall pronounce him unclean. You would hope that if your wife had a beard, it was yellow thin hair. I don't know. It is a dry scald, even a leprosy, upon the head or the beard. And if the priest look on the plague of the scald, and behold, it be not in sight deeper, it's not depressed than the skin, and there is no black hair in it, then the priest shall shut him up that hath the plague of the scald for 7 days. And in the 7th day the priest shall look on the plague, and behold, if the scald spread not, and there be no yellow hair, and the scald be not in sight deeper than the skin, he shall be shaved. But the scald shall he not shave, and the priest shall shut him up that has the scald for 7 more days. So if he's got this spot, or she's got this spot in her beard or on her head, and the priest looks at it, there's no yellow hair in it, and it's not deeper than the skin when he examines, then what he's going to do is he's going to shave your head, ladies or guys, except for the spot that looks infected. He'll leave the hair continue to grow out of that one spot, like a, you know, Taurus bulba. And then shut you up for 7 more days, because he wants to see if that infection in the skin spreads past the spot where the hair is, where it looks infected. He shall be shaven, but the scald, the infected spot, shall he not shave, and the priest shall shut him up that hath the scald 7 days more. And in the 7th day the priest shall look on the scald, and behold, if the scald be not spread in the skin, nor be in sight deeper than the skin, then the priest shall pronounce him clean. And he shall wash his clothes and be clean, and wait for his hair to grow back. But if the scald spread in the skin after his cleansing, so if it spreads past this little skull cap you got growing there, and then that would be visible, that's why they're doing this, then the priest shall look on him, and behold, if the scald be spread in the skin, verse 36, and the priest shall not seek for yellow hair, he is unclean. But if the scald be in his sight at a stay, and the idea is it hasn't spread, and that there is black hair grown up therein, the scald is healed. He is clean. And the priest shall pronounce him clean. Now notice, there's no medicine involved in any of this. If a man also or a woman have in the skin of their flesh bright spots, even white bright spots. Now lots of times older folks, the pigment of the skin dies. I forget again what it's called, but my dad's 80. He's got a few spots like that on his knuckles and his hands where it just has turned white. The pigment dies, and it says, you know, it was important then for the priest to have a detailed way of diagnosing, because you wouldn't want to take this person, it just natural, goes with age sometimes, and put them outside the camp as though they were a leper. So if a man or a woman have in the skin of their flesh bright spots, even white bright spots, then the priest shall look, and behold, if the bright spots in the skin of their flesh be darkish white, it's a freckle. You got to be careful. It's a freckled spot that groweth in the skin. He's clean. And the man whose hair is fallen off his head, he's bald. He's clean. Guy's suffered enough. Leave him alone. You know, just, the guy's bald. They're telling you, look, he's not, I have leprosy or anything. He's bald. And he that hath his hair fallen off from the part of his head towards his face, he is forehead bald. He's clean too. You know, so some guys are forehead bald, some guys are backhead bald, but it says that, you know, we have to be clear about all of this. I didn't write it. I'm just going to read it. And if there be in the bald head or in the bald forehead a white reddish sore, it is a leprosy sprung up in his bald head or in his bald forehead. Then the priest shall look upon it, and behold, if the rising of the sore be white reddish in his bald head or in his bald forehead, as the leprosy appeareth in the skin of the flesh, he is a leprous man. He is unclean. The priest shall pronounce him utterly unclean. His plague is in his head. You may have a husband like that with hair. And the leper in whom the plague is, his clothes shall be torn, and his head bare. No hat, no covering. He shall put a covering upon his upper lip, and he shall cry, unclean, unclean. So they put a, you know, like a veil to keep them from sneezing, coughing, spreading the disease. And they would cry unclean at 100 paces. They would say that you could smell a leper at 100 feet in Jesus' day. They would cry unclean, unclean. All the days wherein the plague shall be in him, he shall be defiled. He is unclean. He shall dwell alone. Without the camp shall his habitation be. Now, the garment also that the plague of leprosy is in, whether it be a woolen garment or a linen garment, sometimes it is our surroundings that are plagued with sin. Sometimes it is our exterior. Sometimes sin in our lives is like leprosy. It is within, and it hits the nerves first. And sin, like leprosy, deadens us. It says in Hebrews 4 that we should beware lest our hearts are hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. And what happens is as we play with sin and we ignore the conviction of the Spirit and we constantly tell the Lord, don't worry about me, I'm handling this, I'm not going to fall, we become desensitized to the conviction of the Holy Spirit. And so often in church we have someone who's fallen and they come in and they say, I don't know how it happened, I don't know how I got in this position. Well, it's like leprosy. It happens in increments. It happens a little bit at a time, and it desensitizes us. One of the problems in leper colonies, and there's an estimated 5,000 lepers in the United States, and in Louisiana there is an institution for lepers. There is in Africa and Southeast Asia an estimated 15 million lepers. So it's a disease that's still around. One of the problems they have is a leper is prone to break a bone in his foot and his toe and not know it, because the leprosy travels along the nerves and desensitizes that person. Oftentimes in leper colonies, the rats will eat off the fingers and the toes while the leper's asleep, and he'll never know it. And sin does that same thing. It desensitizes us. When we read the story of the prodigal son, you know, it says that he is away from his father's house. He has spent all of his inheritance on prostitutes and on drunkenness. And you just look at his life and you can't believe what he's doing. But then it's interesting. It says when he came to his senses, he said, I'd rather be a servant in my father's house. What that tells us is someone who is backslidden or turned away from the Lord has lost their senses. They become desensitized. And sometimes we look at someone we thought was a solid Christian for a long time and we think, how could they have been leading people to Christ, saying the things they were saying, on fire, and we look at them now, they're living in compromise, they're living in sin, what is going on? And sin has that ability to blind us, like Samson was blinded by his sin. It has that ability to desensitize us so that we can't feel the way we should, the conviction of God. We lose our sensitivity to his word. And then we are in the place of this leper where we need a cure for an incurable disease. But God is wonderful and says that he loves the backslider and that he will heal the backslider. When you read through the Old Testament, you will find the word return many more times than the word turn. Return. And God is faithful to call us back. And he was faithful to bring that prodigal to his senses and return that young man to his father's house. And how often he's been faithful in our lives to return our sensitivities and to wake us up out of a stupor and to renew a stronger love for him than we had before. Sometimes the leprosy is in our surroundings. It says in verse 48, whether it be in the warp or the woof. Now the warp and the woof, in case you're interested. The warp, if you have a loom, the warp is the thread that runs vertical, and the woof is the thread that runs from side to side. Some try to associate it with linen and wool, but that's not true. Warp and woof is, warp is up and down, woof is sideways. in linen or woolen, in the skin, or in a leather garment, or in anything made of skin that's leather. And if the plague be greenish or reddish in the garment or in the skin, either in the warp or in the woof or in anything of the skin, it is a plague of leprosy and shall be showed unto the priest. And the priest shall look upon the plague and shut it up that hath the plague 7 days. And he shall look on the plague on the 7th day. If the plague be spread in the garment, either in the warp or in the woof, or in the skin, in the leather, or in any work that is made of leather, the plague is a fretting or an active leprosy. It is unclean. So you have a garment, you have a leather garment, you have a wineskin, you have something made of leather, you see a mold, you see something growing in it, you go to the priest comes and looks at it. If it's green or it's red, it's some kind of bacteria, it's some kind of thing that he ascertains, he sets it aside for a number of days. If he comes back and it has spread, it says it's active and that it is unclean. He shall therefore burn that garment, whether warp or woof, in woolen or linen, or in anything of leather wherein the plague is, for it is an active, a fretting leprosy. It shall be burned in the fire. And like those things that are stained by sin, they are destined for the flame. And if the priest shall look and behold the plague be not spread in the garment, either in the warp or in the woof or in anything of leather, then the priest shall command and they shall wash the thing wherein the plague is, and he shall shut it up for 7 days. And the priest shall look on the plague after that it is washed, and behold, if the plague have not changed its color and the plague be not spread, it is unclean. Thou shalt burn it in the fire. It is a fretting inward. It is still active underneath, whether it be bare within or without. And if the priest look and behold the plague be somewhat dark, it's faded, after the washing of it, he then shall tear it out of the garment, or out of the leather, the skin, or out of the warp, or out of the woof. And if it appear still in the garment, either in the warp or the woof or in anything that's made of leather, it is a spreading plague. Thou shalt burn that wherein the plague is with fire, as sin destines things for the flame. And the garment, either warp or woof, or whatsoever thing of skin it be made of leather, which thou shalt wash, if the plague be departed from them, then it shall be washed a second time. It is clean. This is the law of the plague of leprosy in a garment of woolen or linen, either in a warp or a woof, or anything of skins, to pronounce it clean or to pronounce it unclean. Now, as we come to the 14th chapter, I'm going to read the first 7 verses. We'll stop there. These 7 verses alone should have been sufficient to prove to Annas or Caiaphas or the religious leadership in Jesus' day that, in fact, he was the Messiah. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, this shall be the law of the leper in the day, notice, of his cleansing. He shall be brought unto the priest. The priest shall go forth out of the camp, like Jesus, and the priest shall look and behold if the plague of leprosy, notice, be healed in the leper. Now, always cleansed in the New Testament, the day of his cleansing. This chapter gives us a ritual that is to be enacted in the day that a human being with an incurable disease is cured. And we look at that and we think, what's up, Lord? Are you mocking? You know, how many times did somebody with leprosy have opportunity to look at this and think, why is this written in your word? You know, we have never seen a leper experience what you have written here. Why would you write a ritual directed towards lepers that are healed or cleansed when this is an incurable disease? Now, it's interesting. Maybe there were those who had been pronounced leprous by the priest, and it wasn't really a leprosy. Maybe it was something else. And then if it improved and it was gone, maybe there were those that the priest did proclaim then cleansed. We don't know. We have no record anywhere in the Old Testament of any lepers being cleansed in regards to this sacrifice. Miriam would criticize Moses and his leadership, and God would strike her, Moses' sister, with leprosy. Moses prayed for her, and it departed. There is no mention of sacrifice. We'll read that in Numbers. Jesus would say in Luke, when he is in Nazareth in the synagogue, that in the days of Elisha, there were many lepers in Israel, but none of them were healed, only Naaman the Syrian. And they were so angered that they wanted to take him to the brow of the hill and cast him down. So we have no record. Again, may have happened, we don't know. We do know this for sure. It happened many times during the physical ministry of Jesus on earth for 3.5 years. And we know that Caiaphas and Annas, men who had pronounced human beings leprous and unclean and had put them outside the camp, we know that Caiaphas and Annas all of a sudden were having some of these people come back to them healed, cleansed. And this is what it says to do. Let's look at it. This is the law of the leper in the day of his cleansing. He shall be brought to the priest. The priest shall go forth out of the camp. Now, he's brought evidently to the precincts of the tabernacle or to the temple, but not allowed to go in. The priest is then told, he goes out then to see this person who had leprosy. The priest shall go forth out of the camp. The priest shall look, and behold, if the plague of leprosy be healed in the leper, then shall the priest command to take for him that is to be cleansed 2 birds, alive and clean, and cedar wood, and scarlet, and hyssop. And the priest shall command that one of the birds be killed in an earthen vessel over running water. As for the living bird, he shall take it, and the cedar wood, and the scarlet, and the hyssop, and dip them and the living bird in the blood of the bird that was killed over the running water, and he shall sprinkle upon him that is to be cleansed from the leprosy 7 times, shall pronounce him clean, and shall let the living bird loose into the open field. What a remarkable enactment. And this is what it says. If the leper comes, somebody comes in and tells the priest, hey, there's a guy outside, Uncle Harry, you said he was a leper. Man, he looks great. And the priest were to come out and look at him and say, this is amazing. Are you sure you're Uncle Harry? I'm Uncle Harry. I've always been Uncle Harry. Are you sure? Yes. Then he does this sacrifice, and evidently not in the temple, in the field. He takes 2 doves. He kills one of them over an earthen vessel, which is a picture of the incarnation of Christ, tabernacled among us in an earthen vessel, and pours out the blood. The bird is killed over running water. The Holy Spirit, beautiful type. Cedar, impervious to rot. Hyssop, always associated with cleansing. David, in his sin, in Psalm 51, cleanse me with hyssop. Hyssop, and a sponge given to Jesus when he was on the cross. A scarlet thread, the tale of God's redemption throughout the scripture. And take the living bird then and dip the living bird and all of these things into the blood of the bird that was killed. And then sprinkle the man 7 times with the water and release the living bird that was rinsed in the blood of the other bird. And what a picture of you and I who have been cleansed of an incurable disease, sin. We all have a leprosy. We're all born with a leprosy. We all have an immune deficiency disease. We all have an HIV. It's called sin. It kills every generation. For every 100 people born, 100 people die. No one has ever beat the odds. No one. And it may take 70 years to kill you, but it is an immune deficiency. It is called sin. When we come to Christ and we're cleansed of sin, we're forgiven, like the leper is cleansed, the beautiful thing we see is that he was killed and shed his blood, and then you and I were washed in his blood and set free. We were let go. Now imagine this leper coming to Jesus in the Gospels. Luke, who is the physician, tells us the man was full of leprosy. What that means is that his fingers were gone, his thumbs were gone, his ears were probably gone, his nose was probably gone, lips probably gone, maybe his tongue and his palate, sometimes blind. And he said to Jesus, "If you will, you can make me clean." He said, "All you have to do is will it. It's within your power," is what he's saying. All you have to do is will it. And Matthew gives us the phrase in the Greek, "I will with all my heart." And then it says, Jesus touched him. No doubt the first time in years he had felt a human touch. And it says, instantly he was made whole. What that means is his fingers went, they popped back on, his nose popped on, his ears popped back on, his sight came back, the palate, the roof of his mouth came back. You know, just imagine what happened to this guy. His teeth came back, his gums came back. If you can just try to imagine that, it says he was made whole. And then again, Jesus said, "Don't tell anybody." Tough order there. Now, I'm sure that you've wondered about that if you read that. Jesus says this remarkable thing, "Don't tell anyone, but go and show yourself to the priest and offer the sacrifice that Moses prescribed in the law," very important, "as a testimony unto them." You see, what we believe is that these priests had often looked into chapter 13 trying to figure out how to diagnose leprosy. They knew how to diagnose it. They couldn't cure it. They couldn't cleanse it, but they knew how to diagnose it. Can you imagine Caiaphas? Here's this guy coming to Jerusalem that he had pronounced unclean, made whole, looking at the guy, saying, "Are you sure that's who it is?" And he's saying, "Yes, that's who I am. Look, I'm cleansed, I'm clean." And then Caiaphas now is saying, "Wait a minute, we never even read, what is the sacrifice? We never offered this sacrifice before. What do we do? Quick, get out of Leviticus. Let's look. What do we do?" And what the whole process should have been telling them is, lepers are being cleansed in Israel. An incurable disease is being cleansed and being cured. What it should have told them is the Messiah has come to the nation of Israel. It was for a testimony unto them. That means, and I believe with all my heart, that this chapter, chapter 14, and I want you to read it this week, it's your homework, read chapters 14 and 15, that this chapter was primarily written for Caiaphas and Annas, more than any other priest in the history of the nation of Israel. They offered that sacrifice more than any other priest that ever lived in the nation, in its history. Jesus would heal 10 lepers, remember? Then he would heal another leper. John would tell us of all the things Jesus did would be written in the books, the libraries of the world couldn't contain them. I've picked specific things so that you might believe that Christ is the Son of God and have life through his name. How many lepers did he cleanse? We're not told. Hundreds? 1,000? Caiaphas and Annas were getting good at this sacrifice by the time the ministry of Christ was over. And it was given as a testimony unto them. You and I too, it's our story. Jesus Christ died. His blood was shed. Imagine this leper watching this process. Blood of the bird being mixed with the water. The water's all red. The other bird being dipped in there, a white dove turned red from the blood, then being let go. Imagine how that leper felt as he watched that blood dripping from that bird, that white bird flying away. You know, just remember how we felt when we were saved, when we realized the moment we were saved that Christ had shed his blood so that we could be washed in his blood. And that's the way I felt when I was saved. I felt like a dove that somebody had set free. I remember I woke up the next morning, I looked around and the sky was blue. It had always been blue. I'd never seen it before. There were trees that were green blowing in the wind. I'd always seen them, but I'd never seen them. Birds were singing. They had always been singing. I had heard them, but I had never heard them. I was alive. I remember. It's as though the Lord had taken me and washed me in the blood of his son and set me free from drugs and from the life that I lived. How wonderful. And I want to challenge you this evening, if you don't know Christ personally, the same thing can happen to you. That is why he came. And your life then can be a testimony to those who are religious that have pronounced you unclean. Are you struggling with drugs? Are you struggling with alcohol? Are you struggling with gambling or some kind of sin? Have religious people pointed their finger at you and said you're unclean and put you outside the camp? Well, you can come back to them and say, I'm cleansed. If you accept Jesus as your Savior, and He will take you the way you are, you can go back to them and demonstrate a transformed life. You can go back and say to those relatives, hey, the reason I've changed is because God said, I am holy, therefore you be holy. That'll blow their minds, won't it? I'm telling you, when I got saved, it blew people's minds. I had someone here, in fact, Wednesday night after the service that I hadn't seen since B.C. And she heard I was a pastor, and she said, and I had seen her many times, but not in my right mind, I don't know if he'll remember me. The last time I saw him, he was really stoned. It seems like a different life. Doesn't even seem like the same person as I look back. It's remarkable to wake up in the morning and to be alive and to look forward to the day that Christ returns.